All right, welcome back to episode 44 of the Slide In Podcast. I'm Brayden Anderson, that's Kelly Gallup.
Welcome back.
We've got exciting news. Today's show is brought to you by the Kelly Inn in West Yellowstone. Just a few hundred feet from Yellowstone National Park's entrance sits the Kelly Inn. Kelly Inn is open year-round, although the shoulder season's a great time to come out. We've talked about this a lot, that kind of early spring, late fall. One, there's less people in the park, there's less people on the rivers.
And you can get a room.
It's a perfect time to visit. And another thing that's kind of interesting is the Madison in the park is now open year-round.
Mm-hmm.
So you can come out here in these kind of...
Up to the Wyoming border.
Up to the Wyoming border, yes. Right? So the Barnes mm-hmm. holes, all that stuff mm-hmm. Is fishable year-round. Don't they close that gate at some point? But you have to... I don't know. That's time when nobody should be fishing at all, anyways.
But you can always go in from the cardiac and all that.
Yeah, yeah. So the Kelly Inn, it's a great place to kind of jump off to go fish, all that stuff. I mean, Idaho, Wyoming, Montana, the park, pretty central for all that. And what's great about that location, go fish the Madison in the morning, come back, have breakfast with your family, jump into the park in the afternoon. Another cool thing, they've got a casting pond right next door. And tons of ground floor rooms. You could actually walk straight into the rooms with a fly rod. That's a huge thing. If you've ever stayed at a hotel in a fishing area where you're not on the ground floor, it can be a bit of a bummer sometimes. breaking all your stuff down to get up there after a long day. So when you're ready to relax, unwind, the indoor pool and hot tub, they're there for you. You can explore the park while the crowds are light and animals are active. You book your trip at www.yellowstonekellyinn.com. Use promo code SLIDE2025 for 15% off your stay. The Kelly Inn, family-friendly comfort and world-class fishing all in one spot. Thanks to Kelly Inn for sponsoring our podcast.
And no, I do not own it.
No, Kelly does not own it. No, actually, Roy, I think, manages the mm-hmm. one in West Yellowstone. He comes in here all the time. Yeah. I was talking to him on the phone today, actually, and Jake... You know how last podcast we talked about Jake knows everyone's name? Well, he goes, that guy with the dark hair. I don't know his name. And I walk in, he goes, Roy, what's up, man? I'm like, that's perfect. That's Jake. All right. So another housekeeping thing we want to take care of is a man by the name of Lee Smith. He's just an absolute hoot. Listens to all the podcasts. He came in. He's from Jupiter, Florida. And he said that he had a torn rotator cuff and broken ribs, and he discovered our podcast kind of during his recovery. He wanted me to make sure to tell you that he thinks you're really funny. He said, I'm kind of funny, but that you're really funny. And he said, you're much more handsome than I am, too. He wanted me to pass that along to you.
Really?
I swear to God.
How come everybody thinks you're my kid?
I don't know.
Guess the apple fell from the tree or something.
Fell
wrong direction.
Far. So thanks, Lee Smith, for those kind words about Kelly. Last week we talked about a question from Scott Pennington. He's asking about guides and whether or not they should be allowed to fish on trips if their clients are asking them to. And we got a couple other, what I found to be interesting, kind of questions or comments. Kelly got an email. You want to start with the email?
Sure.
All right, jump in.
Which one? You want to
read
it
off? I can read it too.
You probably see it better than I can.
All right, so this email is from...
That would be hard to do.
Brad.
Nobody's ever had a problem doing that one.
I feel odd saying that one, Brad.
Not a South Park thing.
Sorry about your last name there.
He's not.
No, I'm sure he's not. Sorry for making light of it, whatever. So he says, good morning, Kelly and Brayden. Quick question for the pod. Apologies if I got the wrong email address. I was listening to last week's show when you were discussing the etiquette of tipping a guide. Could you speak briefly about the etiquette of using the guide's tackle? I always ask before a trip what I should bring along, but it is a pain in the ass for the guide to have to rig up your personal rod when he has rods in the boat set up already.
This is my favorite part.
I am the world's okayest caster, and I have a dry fly rod. I just throw well, and it adds to my enjoyment of the day.
Okayest.
To use it, it adds to my enjoyment of the day to use it, but at the same time, I don't want to be a pain. The same goes for flies. I like to tie up some flies in advance of a trip because it adds to the enjoyment of getting ready for a trip. But will a guide think this is stupid since they always have 10,000 flies in the boat? Thanks for reading my question. All the best, Brad.
That's a great follow-up question, and it hits on a lot of stuff. Where are you going? Did you quit?
No, we're good.
Dang it. But it's a great... I couldn't help but digress into the saltwater world, but I'm not going to go there. That's a different world. But, you know, the tipping thing and all that aside, I don't want to dirt on other people's how they do their shit, but I'm going to go through how we do ours. And so if you've ever called here, I don't know why, but I hear Kyler doing it all the time. But the first thing, you know, we've had all these discussions about how our guides are, it's insistent that they behave a certain way. And one of the questions that we do when you call and book a trip is we ask you what your expectations are. What do you want to do? Do you want to learn to nymph, dry, streamer? Do you just want to go out and
do you want to learn? Do you want to have a fun day?
Do you want to go out and euro
a lot
under
of fish,
a bobber?
Big fish.
Yeah, there's a million things, right? So that sets a precedent for the fact that this is not about us. That should be something when you're thinking about booking a trip. And then the next question's one of them, I don't know sequentially, but is do you want to use the guide's equipment or your own, right? I mean, personally, I want my own, right? But a lot of people do trips where they just show up and they say, hey, man, I got an afternoon to kill, whatever. I'm just here to, can I use your equipment? Absolutely. And that, you know, there should be, if you're worth your salt, you should have backups for no matter what. You should, even if you're there, if you're bringing your own equipment, the guide should have, these are pro jocks. They should have their shit packed tight. They should have backup rods and for everything else, everything, fly lines. They should have an extra raincoat. They should have, I mean, they're pro jocks.
Yeah.
When shit goes south, and it does, you're out on that river, it's beautiful, it's 85 degrees. I remember once I was filming on the big, on the wind, and it was, we were shooting a show for Flyfish TV, and Jack Dennis and I were in the same boat, and Jack took my bag out, he says by mistake, I'm curious, and I was still about 240 then, and Jack's about 140, and it goes from 90 to 50 in about, I mean, 1 minute max, maybe less. Rain clouds in the canyon, all of a sudden it's black, it's humping about 40 miles an hour, and it's just sleet rain just crushing
us. Cool breeze comes and rips
it all
over.
I said to Jack, where's my shit? He goes, oh, I think I took your bag out. You can wear mine. No, I don't think I can. But it was very short lived, too. It was a minute long. But real pro jocks should have anything. I mean, I should keep a tarp in my boat, just a little light 5-foot tarp. Shit goes south, you put that tarp over your head, you're fine, right?
Yeah, I've got ponchos in my
boat. Yeah, poncho, whatever. You should have everything. If you're a winter
Johnny
angler...
Johnny made fun of me like crazy for it.
Yeah, well, Johnny...
I forgot my jacket one day.
And so, yeah, well, if you had to be seen in the condom, that's different, but...
5 a.m., first one at the boat ramp, Johnny's taking photos of me.
Oh, perfect. But I mean, so back to that exact question, or, you know, absolutely, you should expect, if you want to bring your own... Very few people, I don't know guides that would say, you know, I want you to use mine, unless they're just lazier than a corn-fed cow. They don't want to do anything, and they got one rigged up, and they don't want to rig. I don't know. I'd be out the boat already.
How long should it take a guide to rig up a double nymph rig? Indicator, split shot, two flies.
Minute, two max.
Yeah.
I mean,
if they're not
it
willing.
Depends if you're sitting there.
I mean,
there
they're going to do it 20 times that
day. You're
going
to.
What's
20 minutes? Minute or two, you know? Who cares, right? Yeah. But anyway, you know, it's not, that's not bad etiquette at all. I mean, you know, I would ask ahead of time, just more of, are you, if you don't have it, to make sure they do.
Right.
And so, cause if, I don't know, if I got in a pro's boat, he didn't have backups or rods, I'd really consider why I was there. Yeah. I mean, and again, this is how you, it doesn't matter. If you're pissed off as a guide right now, and I don't give a shit how you run your business. I'm telling you how we run our business, how I would expect to be treated as a client. Mm-hmm. And so absolutely, you know, if you want to bring your own, I fish, most of the people I know don't want to use anybody else's stuff. I mean, I'm used to what I use. I've got mine rigged up the way I want it. You know, I know what I like, but absolutely the guide should have it. Flies wise, and again, how we do it, we don't charge for flies, right? And we've been through all sorts of that, you know, like steelheading, salmon fishing when I was in Michigan, we'd give them 4 dozen flies. After that, they had a ticket. I mean, it was nothing to, you're snagging salmon and rocks and trees. And, you know, we had, I think, 4 dozen. After that, it was on you. But you never, you know, now you're like, what, am I going to charge you for a dozen flies? No. Yeah, hardly ever did that stuff. But, and everything evolves, right? Some people charge for flies. Usually, like, I mean, we don't. We just, it's just part of the deal. And so, but that's something I would bring up front. But nobody on earth, well, let me rephrase that. I don't understand why any guide would be mad if you brought your own. And I'm bringing my own flies. I am going to bring my, unless I'm on a trip I've Billy's never.
Bringing 4,000 of his own flies.
And I mean, like my mentor, Doc Ellis, I've seen him intimidate guides because of the quantity and quality of his flies.
Yeah.
When he opens up a fly box, you kind of go, oh, what is that? You know, but he likes to use his flies and I like to use my flies. I don't think that should, I can't imagine anybody being upset. The only time I could see that, and I'll give you one example. The worst 5 words you can hear is I just got back from Alaska. Because that's followed up by, that's someone who really doesn't know what the hell's going on, because no matter where else you are, you're not in Alaska. And I used to get asked frequently, do they eat flesh flies here? We'd be on the Upper Manistee in the middle of August. There aren't a lot of decaying salmon and flesh. And yet, if they threw it, they'd get a fish. But they'd never get another fish for 7 hours, right? And so,
lightning can strike once.
Yeah, and it usually did. I mean, when if it's just a guide thing, if you say they'll never eat that, you might as well just wait 10 seconds. Whee! There goes your reel.
Yep.
He's on, right? But then the rest of the day is going to suck. But the only caveat to this is when a guide, they want you to catch fish. Again, what are your expectations for this trip, Mr. Braden? Well, I'd like to catch 1,000 fish. Well, we're going to put on a green perdigon. And, you know, and another one underneath it. We're going to run a bobber all day. There you go. You good? Yeah, great. Well, I don't want to do that. So what you've got to figure out your expectation. Is it, you know, and the guide, and one thing in particular with young guides, and I was just thinking of Scotty Hall. If you pulled up and you said to Scotty Hall, you know, I'd really like to throw flesh flies all day. Scotty would say, that's great. If that's what you want, that's what we'll do.
It's your day.
It's your day. I might, you know, if you don't mind, I'm going to, you know, later, if it's not working, maybe we'll try something. But he's just going to go along.
Yeah.
Well, that's on you. You want to throw a flesh fly in a freestone with no salmon in it? Go ahead, right? But don't put that on your guide. Do not think that that's an indicator of you not tipping because you had a shit day. The guide will have what they think is the best for your opportunity.
Yes.
So, and if you bring your flies and they aren't working and they aren't working, well, then you probably should defer to the guide, right? That's kind of why, you know, but I've got client, well, I don't anymore, but Johnny has them, but that are so past needing a guide. They're O'Connor. His whole family are the best anglers you'll ever see in your life, right? Mm-hmm. And they do things their way. They're going to listen to Johnny, but they're going to do things. They're just really, they need somebody. Like, I think Rick goes so he can just fish all day.
Yeah.
You know, and
doesn't
so.
Have to take his turn rowing the boat or whatever.
Yeah. And so he wants to fish, but he's also, Johnny says, the best dry fly angler he's ever seen.
Yeah.
Well, you know, that's fun to watch as a guide.
Yeah.
And so. But if you got to set your expectations when you do this stuff and you say, well, I'm going to bring my own flies. And if they don't work, and that's not on the guide.
Right.
And if the guide says, well, I wouldn't use that, and you still want to use it, hallelujah. Now you know what you're in for. You're into fish. But first and foremost, what is your expectations today? Are you going to use your stuff or the guide's stuff? the flies are included, so it is no loss to you.
Right.
So that's how we run our business. How the rest of the world does it, I don't. I've been to lots of places. I know they're all. I don't go to places that have shithead guides either. So, you know, they're all different. But from what the question you asked, what Brad asked was that, you know, is it bad etiquette? Not at all. Not at all. Matter of fact, as a guide, most of my life, I would always encourage them to bring their flies.
Yeah.
And I would encourage, you know, especially the guys out east that would come in and fish. And I mean, I'd find stuff all the time and look at it and go, oh, man, this is really cool looking. Mm-hmm. Right? I enjoyed it. I had a guy who lived on a yacht who tied, he put a hook through my face. And
is that what that scar is?
Yeah. Yeah. I got a big cyst from it. It was awful. It looked like a marble. but he was one of the best tires I've ever seen in my life. Huh. I waited every year to see that guy's flies. And he would show, he basically lived, I think, 9 months a year on a yacht.
Tough flies.
And a big one. And then big one, 100 and some. Oof. It was, but all I basically did was tie. Mm. And man, I just couldn't wait till he showed up.
Yep.
It was, God, they were just so gorgeous. Everything he tied was like perfect. And we used all kinds of stuff. And it gave me a great opportunity to experiment. But onward without that, just to close it out, it's not bad etiquette at all. I would ask, but I would also, and that's when I would make my judgments. I would see how that was responded to.
Yeah.
But if they don't ask you what you're, if you just get the, okay, what's your name? Credit card? Okay, be here at 8. I'd be curious about that.
Right out of the gate,
I'd be going, so, yeah, okay, you don't really
At the end of the day, you're spending a lot of money. And like some people have a ton of money. Some people don't have a ton of money, and they've saved up all year to come out and do this trip. Like, it's your day. And, you know, as I think I've never been a fishing guide. I'm not a fishing guide. I don't know what it's like to be in those shoes. But I imagine it can be frustrating at times, but you are in the service industry.
There are certain...
There to make that person's day.
Yeah.
But I think at the same time, like you said, the caveat of bringing your own flies is understanding that now some of this day is out of the guide's hands.
Yep.
If you're only going to fish your flies and you don't catch fish, you can't blame the guide. You still owe them a tip, right?
Yeah,
extent, right? That's not a hard
No, you owe the tip no matter what. But yeah. I mean, unless it's flat out asshole. But there are lodges. There's one in Wyoming, I think it is. No, not Wyoming. It's in Idaho. And they post up their shit by tons a year or whatever. And there's an actual thing where this is all about the guides hitting numbers.
Yeah.
That is the dumbest shit on earth. It's kind of like watching some of that shit I see here where everybody's doing the same style of fishing. It's just about putting numbers in the boat, dragging or whatever you're doing, right? And so there are lodges that I know about that it's competitive between the guides and it's a count thing, right? And so to me, that would be absolutely nails on a chalkboard.
Yeah,
I mean, you've completely lost the whole.
I want to learn to streamer fish. Well, they're not eating that good. Why don't we run?
Yeah, let's run these double
four worms.
Yeah, let's run four wormers down the middle and tip it with a piece of corn.
Now, so, the other side of that I think is kind of funny on a small side. There's a shop over on the Big Hole who had a buddy who guided for, and they would have a year long contest of who could get the biggest sucker as the guide staff. And so, you know, when they're not, if a guy wants to throw streamers, he's a streamer angler, they're not screwing with his day. But the people
you
who
could
go
still
over there
tip it with a worm.
Yeah. Well, yeah. But if you wanted, you know, if people are fishing bobbers and fishing worms and stuff, which the Big Hole's a great worm river, there's always this one hole, and I can't remember where it was, but he told me that they'd, you know, as they're coming up to it, they go, all right, well, why don't we slide those indicators about 7 feet up? We'll throw one more split shot on. And then run them through one hole trying to get the big sucker.
Right.
And then put them back on the trout game. And like, you know, is that in the client's best interest? Probably not, but it's...
Yeah, you got just as good a chance of a big old brown sitting down there
exactly.
Eating that thing.
So I thought that's kind of funny. I think it's harmless, but yeah.
Well, especially if you were part of the process.
Right.
Listen, this is a competition.
Yeah.
I mean, I'd be full in. I'd run for suckers all day for you.
Well, I sort of like the idea of a guide like it's not right, but I think it's really funny to pull the wool over the client's eyes. Be like, yeah, this hole's just really deep. There's a lot of big browns there. And then just getting a whopper.
You mean like
of a
guys
sucker.
Who put on lightning bugs because there's no fish biting, but the whiteys will inhale them?
Yes.
And the rod's like bent and all that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But that would be, to finish that up, I just ask a lot of questions. You should be able to flesh these things out pretty quick when you're talking to the lodge owner, whoever's talking. That you should be able to, the answer should come to you quite clearly.
Yeah.
I'd like to do this. If they don't ask you, I would like to, what would you like to do in your trip? It just, to me, that's just, you're not that concerned with the trip.
We were trained immediately upon showing up. You answer the phone, somebody wants to book a trip. You do the basic stuff, the dates, the names, the phone numbers, all that. And then what do you want out of this trip?
Yeah.
Do you have allergies? Where are you staying? Is it going to make more sense to meet
you if
here?
We can't contact
yes.
you?
Yes. Yeah. Well, and then I remember I got
eliminate
in hot shit.
All of it.
I got in hot shit one day because I forgot or never learned that you're supposed to have the backup clause of if we can't get in contact, meet at the shop at 8 a.m. And I'm like running around like a chicken with my head cut off trying to get a guide who's got no cell service and a client who's got no cell service, get them together early in the morning and then, so.
Well, every business is different. If you were in Atlanta, it would be different. But if you're in the mountains of anywhere, I don't care, and there's no cell service, it just shows that you really want to make a day. And again, I don't care how the rest of the world does their shit. I'm just telling you how we would do it, and I think it sets a high bar for, and anybody that doesn't want to reach up to that thing is just don't deal with them.
Yeah,
it's amazing how many people I had here, in particular the first 10 years of outfitting, who would tell me that their guides were all, they really didn't like them that much, but I don't want to change because I don't want to get one that's even meaner. I'm like, are you shitting me? What kind of spineless jellyfish are you?
He yells at me because he loves me.
Step up. This ain't salt water. At every bit of your trip, and by the way, when you're talking about high dollar rollers and low, my favorite anglers, almost without exception, were the people who saved for 2 years to go on a trip.
It's the best.
It was blue collar cats that are gonna. They save for it. It's all, and they're the ones that always want to row. Can I row? No, you're gonna fish all day. Yeah, but I feel weird about being here not rowing. I know how to row. I know you do, huh? But you're gonna fish all day. Yeah.
Well, they're so excited to be there. It's a once every couple year experience. Not this 35 times a year. Not that those people are bad either.
No,
there's some great ones. There's some tough ones.
Everybody. Everybody tends to call themselves out of businesses. They go like, okay, I didn't like that guy. That's cool. That's how it's supposed to be.
Yeah.
So don't be afraid to jump ship just because you don't want somebody that yells more at you. I can't believe how I used to hear that.
Well, and we get that when people call in. They say, I want someone who doesn't yell. Yeah. Oh, I'm like, don't go with Johnny.
Johnny's the worst.
We'll put you with
Jordan. He's the rudest ever. I never understood it, but... For some reason,
people still like fishing with him. Maybe it's because he's fishing.
I don't know.
All right. We've got a couple other questions, comments that are still kind of on this guide thing, and I found them to be interesting. And Anison Krill 6179 on YouTube says, are your stickers free? What a great idea to put a sticker on a cooler. And then I think the real comment is, it's perfectly acceptable to demonstrate a proper drift for a client if they ask you to, which I've done more than a few times. Just set early to miss or move the fly if a fish is about to eat so you don't hook it. And don't be tempted by the I want to see you catch that fish request. If a fish is rising or if there's a decent chance of an eat, you don't take the rod and demonstrate the cast and drift. The only exception is if you have an established relationship with the client, have previously witnessed them catch several larger fish under more technical conditions, and there's a mutual understanding that the client is a better and more accomplished angler than yourself. I wanted to see what you thought about that.
Totally disagree with one part, but I totally, this person, this obviously a guide, has massaged his client base to the fact that he's friendly with them, he knows them. He put way too much effort into this explanation that be he's a shit guide or she. I don't remember the name. Obviously, this person's a good guide. And the only thing I disagree with completely was I don't like this whole pull the fly and move the fly. That pushed the fish down.
Yeah.
Now that can put a fish down, man.
Now I picture those not like a rhythm eating fish. It's like if you're in a cutthroat fishery and you see one coming, get it away from it.
Yeah, well, then everybody gets stupid.
It's a very
not everybody gets to fish with those stupid fish. I mean, but I've seen Cuddy's lockjaw on it too.
Yeah,
I've seen that. But I agree with everything because this is when you said a long term established. That means that I would assume you're a good guide, and you be like me taking Herm or somebody that I or Chris, one of the guys I fished all my life. But I still want to see. If they're that good, if you've guided them that much, I still want that person to take two or three shots at that fish, right?
Yep.
And it's a well-established, they're a good angler, you've got a good rapport with each other, everything's great. I don't like the idea of putting a flyover and trying to get it away from them and putting it down possibly. That's just me, but like he has a caveat here of that he has massaged this person into the, they have a relationship. There's a difference, but I still would never do it on a first shot. I would make that person know, nope, you're going to take a shot at this fish.
Yep.
Take it, man. If you're talking about a 14-inch piss ant, who cares? But I mean, it's a real fish. It's on. It's up. I want my client to take a shot, and if, which you know, how many times if you're a technical dry fly angler, which, you know, I spent most of my life with the dry fly world. You put that fish down, you know, you'll, how many times, oh shit. Well, he isn't coming back. Well, that's kind of like skating it off from the bite. He might not be coming back.
Right.
So I don't like that part, but I do understand what you're saying. You obviously have, you're a good guide. You understand your client base. You're not going to do it every run, but I would rather my client always takes the first shot. I don't give a shit. And I just, yeah. And then if it's the right customer, it's even better when you say, there, see what I mean? And then then you get to mess with them all day,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, yeah.
But it's that is, like you said, you said that you have this relationship.
You build rapport.
Which tells me that you're a good angler, good guide, good blah, blah, blah. And your clients like you. And so that, I mean, obviously, after you've guided for so long, people, 10, 15 years, I mean, I can't tell you how many christenings and weddings and all that kind of crap that I was invited to because you become such good friends with these people, right? Well, after a while, it's, I mean, me, if I was guiding Chuck Jeffries, I would tell him how he sucked all day. That's all I would do is rattle his cage all day.
That's because you guys, it's no longer like a really a working relationship.
Exactly.
And it still is, but you're friends at
this
point.
It is, and it's like just if we're fishing, it's just a rag contest all day.
Right.
And so, but there's a big difference. There's a big difference between a 5-10 year relationship and going on a trip with somebody. Mm-hmm. And this person, what was it? Was AK?
Anison.
I mean, that's. Obviously, you have you established business, and so I see where he's getting it. And I would, you know, it's different. It's just after a while. I mean, you guide people 30, 40 years. You've pretty much there's a lot of things change, right? Yep. I mean, you're half marriage counselor, half you know shrink, half bartender, half whatever, and so. Although we don't let them drink in the boat. They can drink. That's another. I don't. There are certain places I know where people drink in the boats. I didn't do that. I didn't like that. But
I know you don't like
that. I don't care.
I don't like it. I don't like fishing drunk. Whatever. I was just talking to Jack about this. We were out steelheading.
I like doing anything drunk. Well.
Actually, a couple things.
Sometimes the sheep get stuck on the wrong side of the fence. So let that roll.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's go to the next one. this one also kind of related. I just want to hear your thoughts on this, Kelly. This is Suga Canadian. I can't read that. Whatever. Hot and controversial take. Guide service owners already charge a king's ransom up front. One, this is a numbered comment here. One, if cheap owners would pay the guides enough, we wouldn't have to tip them. Two, it feels like we are making up for greed sack owners that refuse to shell out for quality employees.
Greed sack?
Greed sack.
Oh, I like that.
It feels similar to the first one. Three, guiding service owners want us to do the dirty work for them by low or no tipping a bad guide as a way to weed the non-hackers out. Paying fishermen women should not be the HR service hatchet men for guide owners. Pay them right and abolish the tip system. Get rid of the lazy bad guides. I would gladly pay more for a quality guide service that doesn't need supplemental income from me. And your lunch better be good. On another note, food service workers, read waiters and waitresses, have been getting progressively worse over the last 5 years. Some places now suggesting 20 to 25% tips for worse service. Hard pass. I should never have to ask for a refill. I think this guy is the old man that yells at clouds.
I don't know. I think he's half baiting us, but half...
I agree.
Half disgruntled. So I will... Again, I'll just defer right back to this guide service. My guides, no matter what, are the highest paid guides in the industry. I don't care.
And we don't have the highest. I think we're actually one of the lower daily rates.
We're less than a lot of them, but we pay more than any of them.
Yes.
And when I find out somebody pays more than mine, at the end of the day, the outfitter, I don't agree with the premises that the outfitter's taking. And I don't know, he speaks differently. Like, it's maybe he's not even from the States. I don't know. Some of the way he was wording some of that, but
that could have just been me being bad at reading too.
The definition sounded a little weird to me, but yeah. I don't know where other people do. Again, I will tell you very simply. I think I make $100 a trip, but I pay the shuttle. You know, there's a lot of you're incurring all the cost to do business. All the advertising, all the promotion, everything you do to get people in your door.
I mean, the software system we use costs us money.
Everything costs money to run a freaking... You got to pay them son of a bitches.
$4.99 an hour.
You got to pay that freaking processing card every time you run a card through there.
3%.
Blah, blah, blah.
Yep.
So at the end of the day, and I know other outfitters that take $300 on a $500 trip, right?
Yeah.
That's just not the way we do it. Our guides are paid as high as possible. And they get weeded by comments from the... I'll tell you how they really get weeded out. It's by how many request trips they get. Yeah. So at the end of the year, a guide like Johnny, Nate, I don't care, George, any of them, they're going to have about a 98% return request. I want to go with him again. I want to go with her again. I never want to see Johnny again in my life, right?
These are of the people that are rebooking.
Yeah.
Right.
And then, but then you're going to get the next one, which is the pure request. I've heard so much about Andrew. I want to go with him.
Yeah.
Well, he's booked. I'm sorry. He can't. Okay. But I mean, that is how we call
the word of mouth.
Yeah. And one of our guides this year, I had a person stay an extra 2 hours sitting around here waiting. He was heading into the park and he waited about 2 hours to tell me how good this guide was. He wanted me to personally hear it.
Do you remember which guide it was?
Yeah, it was Nate.
Yeah.
And I was like, well, there you go. That's how we do it. This greedy owner thing, I do know that exists. I do. I've talked to...
Those outfitters are out there.
There's quite a few of them, actually.
A lot of boats out every day.
But they're the ones that have huge turnovers. They have, the people are coming to us trying to get in here, or they're going to other people that pay like they should. And there's none of that cutthroat thing, you know, with our guides. And so I understand what whoever this is, what was his name?
Suga.
I understand where you could think that. So the first part was we should pay more. No, there's a point. You know, there's a point. We pay as much as we can. I mean, but the outfitter does have to make something. This isn't a not-for-profit. And so I'd like to know what you would consider. I would love to see what, how you would do your own life. But, and whenever somebody starts whining about bad or tipping and stuff like that, I'm always a little curious. It's like 20% is cute. I have no problem doing 30, 40. It's, if I like something, I know what these people make. And I know what our guy, and by the way, this not tipping the guide, first of all, you've never put your ass in behind those oars and rode 8 hours a day and supplied the lunch and made sure this, you didn't fall in the river and drown and kept it a good day and made things work for people. You haven't done that, I'm guessing.
That's a 12 and a half hour day. Yeah, cleaning out the boat, making lunches, rigging rods, organizing flies. Morning,
you know, getting your stuff, coming back, clean your boat, clean your cooler, clean yourself, feed yourself, prep yourself for the next day, and show up with a smile on your face.
Train your horses. That's what Hunter's doing now. I mean,
yeah, exactly.
Working his ass off.
So, well, he deserves it. But but they, so that part, I don't think you know shit about this. I just think you have this idea that guides make all this money. Then you got to ask yourself, a really good guide out here, I saw a stat once on when we were talking about regulating this river, the average, actually, I believe the number was 74% of the outfitter guides on this river did 68 days or less. Mm-hmm. Well, you do the math. If you're getting, what do the guides get, 450 or whatever, 500, whatever, 450, I don't know what it is. And you got 100 days, okay? That's a big year. That's a big year. Now you got to go somewhere else to make this river's done, right? Now you've got an option. So let's say you made $45,000. That tip goes a long ways. That goes a long ways to you still, till that person still being in business the next year, and he can pay, he or she can pay their rent, pay their car payment, pay their insurance, pay all the shit that you take for granted they're giving them, and then you've still got to go somewhere else to finish that season out.
Yeah.
And so, guiding wise, if you know, pay the.
A lot of these guys are paying double rents too, right?
Yeah,
they got a house that they live everybody. With their girlfriend or something. Then they've got their trailer.
Almost
here.
Everybody's got two lives,
yeah.
And it maybe they go to Argentina, Chile, New Zealand, Alaska. I don't care, but they're double. You got expenses when you do that. So when you say if these cheap asses would get more or don't expect a tip that I should pay them more, that's great. I would do that gladly. But your ass has got to pay for that.
Yeah.
You're the
cost
one,
of the trip is going to go up proportionally.
Everything goes up. We haven't, I don't know when, 2 years ago, three, last time we raised the rates. But if it's concurrent to what comes in. You can't pay somebody more than you make.
Right.
And this assumption that everybody's great. And now, like, granted, I know there's cats out there that do it, and there's young anglers that want to be in the guide business that take a beating to get in the experience. I get that. That was Alaska for a long time. You went to Alaska, you're not getting paid shit, you worked like a horse, and then you come back and you can say, well, I've got experience.
Yep.
Right? And so That was in the 80s. That was real prevalent in our business then. But to say that all outfitters, that it's a total crock of shit. That's not how it works. And I have no problem telling people what I get paid, what they get paid. Profit's not a dirty word, you know? Start your own freaking business. So let's see how you do.
Yeah.
Let's see how quick you give everybody everything.
Well, if
and that's not, but that doesn't matter. You don't get good guy. It's not always, pay is the first, but you got to earn that.
Yeah.
You don't, I'm not bringing some shithead guy in here that's pissed off every morning, hung over, and you know got a bad attitude, and I'm not paying him more just so he can row somebody down the river. You cull these people out, you get them gone, you get the best of the best, and you pay as much as you've in.
And for anybody that thinks Kelly is a greedy outfitter, how many boats could you put down the river every day?
Oh, my God. It would be ridiculous.
We have 5 full-time guides, and it's a narrow staff. Because, and I fished with all
of them. We've got 14, I think, guides that work for us.
That we can book.
Yeah, and or their own outfitters or whatever. So we're running, you know, probably 8-10 boats a day, usual. If we wanted to just go, you could probably put, you know, 15 down every day. You could have.
We turn down so many trips.
It's not. Yeah. It's not. there's just a point where things go south when, you know, it's better to have good, small quality groups than just hire. And then you're not hiring the best of the best.
Right. Well, and you lose control when the group gets too big too.
No, I don't.
I would.
I don't run it. Johnny does.
Yeah, there you go. Johnny keeps pretty good control over that yes. group too.
The last thing you need to do is have that Johnny talk.
Yeah. Oh, he's a scary man when he wants to be.
Yeah.
How scary is you?
My rip.
You fucking scare the shit out of people.
Most of my... The overpowering part of that question had to do with, I don't want a tip. You know,
yes.
It really came down to...
that's what the vibe that, of that
yeah, that's the
was.
Vibe that's really showing up. Most of the clients, and I mean, not just... I mean, 95 plus want to tip.
Yeah.
Want to say... man, that person made my day a great day. And I would do, I mean, they just
I mean, they see
really.
They see a young, hungry guy and they go,
yeah.
I want to help this person
yeah.
out.
And they want to have that. And they had a great experience. I wonder if concurrent with your dissatisfaction, if you hired the cheapest guy out there and didn't tip him, you never had a good trip. And so you're. It's going back to me as the shop owner. I just see a completely different mindset of our customers, and they're not all rich, you know? Some of them are pretty well off. Yep. Some of them are flat out stinking rich, right?
Yep.
And, but it doesn't matter if they're rich, poor, in between, you know, saved for 2 years to do a trip, they are so happy because they had a great time. And they probably have worked a day in their life, and they realize that 8 hours behind the oars, you know, I had a saltwater guy tell me how hard it was running around in that boat one day. I says, huh, you should try getting behind the oars for 8 hours on a freestone.
With a 30-mile-per-hour downstream.
Yeah, with 200-300-pound guys in the boat. And so it's like, yeah, okay, well, I get it. Yeah, I do that too, but... I just think that there's something in this question or this response that has more to do with they just don't want to do this.
Yeah.
So, but they don't really want the trip to go to $800 and may give the guide another extra $150. They want it to go back to 1985 when they were $200 and they don't want a tip and they want a 10-hour day.
Yeah.
So...
Well, wanting to tip service staff was kind of an indicator of that, too. You know?
When we were down at the Big Hole, which I don't know, when we were all down there, right? When we went to shoot the thing with Mike and Doc and Jerry.
Yes, Bighorn.
What did I say, Hole?
Hole, yeah.
Bighorn. And we stayed at the Trout Shop.
Oh, yeah,
and Hale,
this is funny.
And it was, oh, what a great place.
It's great, yeah.
Steve and Hale and everybody there was just so good. So unbelievably good. And... we had a dinner and we had a waitress who was, I can't remember which daughter it was, but we didn't know it at the time. And everybody there is just the opposite. And so we tipped more than the meal.
Yeah.
Everybody said, it's like everybody was just tipping for the whole table all at once.
Mm-hmm.
And this is the kind of people you're talking quality people. The next morning, I go in to check out and say goodbye, and they go, there's a problem with your tab last night. I'm like, oh shit, we stepped them. I'm thinking immediately, it's like, huh, holy shit. I remember we were tipping, and I says, damn, I must have forgot to pay for it, because I was paying for the dinner, right? And I was like, oh shit, I know we were giving up, the, you know, tipping out and going like this, and she goes, what's the problem? I said, what was the problem? Did I forget to pay? And she goes, you tipped more than the meal. I said, oh, cool. Whew, God, for a minute there, I thought we forgot. I says, that girl was incredible.
Yeah.
And she goes, that's my daughter. I says, good. She goes, well, this isn't a good precedent. Kind of like when Chuck was tipping more than the trip. I go, I get it. But she was the only gal in there. So it's not like we're going to cause a... But I mean, there's a different, you know...
She's serving 7 tables or something. And she's on it. She's doing a great job.
And this whole, I don't know. I'm a very... shit service is shit service. I'm not going to reward that greatly either. But I also know a lot of restaurant owners and how hard it is to get quality workers in this day and age, and how hard it is to do anything.
Well, it's hard to keep a restaurant above ground, too, for more than a year.
And how hard it is for the people doing it. And you know, take a look around you when you're going to pass judgment on, I shouldn't have to ask for my water to be refilled. Holy shit, are you important? It's like, really? That, now look at the he or she that's out there running around, got 10 tables, and they're just running to get everything done. And you got one dumbass like me who wants to talk to you and make you laugh. And I take up the 4 minutes that you don't have.
Yeah, this guy's actually just pissed at you because he saw you talking to the waitress.
Yeah, that's what you should really be pissed off. You should send me over some dirty looks because I'm the one that slowed your waiter or waitress down.
Yeah.
Take a peek around you and just put yourself there.
And there and just for a minute. They're on their feet for 8 hours a day, like hustling their ass off. And you're, I mean, tip them.
Yeah. It's
my favorite thing to do is go and order the cheapest beer in a bar and then tip double the price of it. Just, I mean, and I'm not a wealthy man, and but it's just the right thing to do if you're going to order a $3 beer, right?
Is there such a thing?
There's another, well, yeah, PBR right near. And the gravel bar does $2 Coors Light cans.
Yes.
Yeah. I walked in and the, I can't remember her name. She's a nurse. She also works at the gravel bar. And she immediately goes, she goes, oh, you're going to be so excited. We're now doing $2 Coors Lights. I'm like, that's an insult, but I am happy. So just another like quick kind of story is.
She's the most fit human on earth.
She is. She is. So there's, I won't say the names or the dollar amounts or anything, but we had a guide the other day get a outstanding tip from a great client of ours. Somebody who's just always in the shop. Everybody really likes these people. And it was a borderline a huge tip. And the guide comes in and goes, can you check to see if they have money left on their room or the cost of the trip? Because we caught two fish today. It was really brutal out there. And like they must have thought they had more money to pay on the trip or whatever. So they looked through it all. No, it's all paid up. And the guide still went, they must have made a mistake.
Yeah.
And they went back to the client and said, you gave me too much money. And they said, no, we didn't. Just take it. And like, I don't know a lot about these people, but I don't believe they're, you know, incredibly wealthy, whatever. But you know what they had? They had that's a freaking out.
That's not usually the high tippers. It's the incredibly wealthy.
Right. Normally, they don't understand the cost of the dollar.
Well, the people that generally do are the people who appreciate and that know, I don't know, economic one way or the other, but it's the appreciation.
Yeah.
And
they had a great day with his guide, even though, you know, the fishing wasn't that great. And they decided to reward the guide. And that's just cool. And it's cool the guide to go, wait, I think you guys screw. I mean, it's just, it's great people involved on both sides.
You want to, you know, one of the thing about tipping is, I didn't like that part about the $20 last week, but Johnny's never looked at one in his life.
Straight in the pocket.
Doesn't care.
Yeah.
And doesn't matter if it doesn't.
Yeah.
It's not, and we always make fun of Johnny being our rip because he's the one that you have to talk to as a guide. And not just the six full-time guys, whatever it is, but every other guy. When you're here doing a trip, you're working for us. You're not working for you.
Yep.
That's something that gets drilled in real quickly, and that's when I have seen, oh, you know, I can tell what outfitter they've worked for, and it's like, yeah, you're never working here again, that's not happening. But it's like Johnny says, it's a bonus.
Yep.
And it's none of your business. If you got issues, you come back in and you talk to Johnny. Uh-huh. And say, I don't want to be with this person again, but you never express it. And it's like, that's just, it's, you can be a waiter, a waitress, a bartender, whatever. It's just part of it. That's just part of the give and take. Sometimes it's great, sometimes it's bad. Whoever this was owes me money.
All right. Before we get into our next question, I just wanted to do a quick shout out to Danny Frank and the Colorado Trout Hunters. Danny came in here the other day. He's a longtime friend of Jake Owey. Jake O or Owey? I have no idea how to say his name. Longtime friend of his, Danny's just the man. We hammed it up here for a while. I know he's a big fan of the podcast, so just want to give him a shout out. Great dude, Colorado Trout Hunters. If you're in Colorado and you need a trip, go find Danny. All right, next question is from somebody who asked me to.
And I'm getting 20% all of his trips.
Yeah, there you go. this guy, I'm not going to actually say who this question's from, as he asked me not to. He says, "Hey, Braden, big enjoy of the pod and the vids. Love hearing the insights and ramblings." I think he's talking about Kelly, not me. "As someone in my first year in the fly game, I had a question for you guys. I'm curious how you guys feel about trash flies and where the line is. I see and hear all the time about people ripping on squirmy worms or scuds or so on, and wondering what you guys think."
I was looking for clarification of trash flies.
Yep. Junk flies.
Yeah, you got
it. "Is this a running joke of sorts, or is there a line you guys choose not to cross to catch fish? I.e., if the river you're on is notorious for a worm bite, will you not tie one on out of principle? I also know a few people that say that nymphing is looked down upon or a cop-out to catch fish, bobber watchers, etc. I totally understand the addiction of a dry fly or streamer eat, but isn't the whole point to catch fish? Sorry for the paragraph. Hope you can read all that first try. P.S. Don't list my name so my purest friends don't think I'm a squirmy worm-using loser." Thanks.
What I caught from that in the very end was dry fly or streamer bite, which used to be the antichrist. That was the streamer was not looked on as a good thing.
Yeah, it's not dry fly and streamer.
Now there's just dry.
There's dry, and then there's those
other people. Yeah, so
scum.
The way you put that, but trash flies to me. Earlier, you said something about the big hole in the sucker fest, and it reminded me of Doc Ellis, who I talk about constantly because he's just that great.
The coolest guy that's ever lived.
And it's like, he does all this research, right? Always before he goes anywhere. And he and I lived here for a couple of years at that point. It's really right in the beginning when I first bought this place, and we were going over the big hole, and he said, we get there, and he pulls out a purple worm. I'd never seen one. It was really, never really seen one. And I mean, this is before, all chenille, there was no squirmies and all that shit then. And he said, I talked to Frank over here, and he says, never come here in this month. It was fall without a purple worm. And we've been getting our ass kicked. We were throwing worms. Yeah. We were throwing whatever. We were just fishing, right? And he put a clinic on with that purple worm.
Yeah.
And I'm like thinking to myself, God, he researches everything. It's just like I live here and he's ahead of me already. But I don't know what a trap. I get the whole mop shit that that it's just.
Although it's a freaking great crane fly.
It's the greatest. Imitation. It's one of the best crane fly imitations on earth. Rather, people eat it, or trout eat it for pellets in certain areas. Who gives a shit? They're pellet feeders. You know, because you go back to the matching the hatch. And this goes back into the 60s and 70s when people started subsurfacing more. And there was this, you know, matching the hatch. What is a trash fly? Well, I would say it's a pertagon because it mimics nothing.
Yeah.
A mop fly at least does that. But does a pertagon catch more fish than maybe any fly on earth? Probably.
Yeah.
And just so where's your limit? I mean, is pure mylar a trash fly or is it a superstar fly? Yeah. Is a mop fly, because they said it about a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
They said it about anything that went underwater for a long time. So now what is your definition, right? I love nymph fishing. Hell, I love bobber fishing. I'll never get past watching a bobber. Pop, pop. I think it's funny as shit. I think I hardly ever fish them. I don't know why. I love it. I think they're a blast. I just don't get hung up on this, your style, my style, whatever. So whatever floats your little boat. But the trash flies, I mean, pegging to me is a trash fly. Any sort of plastic bead to me. I don't even think they're flies. I mean, you're really at the limit. That was kind of the whole Euro thing with the too long a leader. You know, you go back to the 70s, 80s when you're steelhead fishing with all that stuff and we're running. I mean, I remember when eggs were looked down on so badly. They still are in certain areas. But
do you remember when Matt came in and asked you about, it was before I was here, Matt came in like December or something and asked you if egg-sucking leeches would work. And you said, yeah, they'll fish great right now. He goes, okay, and where do you have them? He said, I don't sell that shit.
That's just to bug him. Yeah. One of my favorite flies on earth is my steelhead woolly sculpin that with a little egg sac under the... It's a woolly sculpin with an egg sac below it. God, they eat. That day I had with the all those brown trout and everyone I made an egg sucking late. What's my version of it? But
I mean, at that point, that's matching a hatch.
Well, we were swinging it.
Yeah.
Well, I never seen really. But I mean, the whole egg thing, they'll eat a freaking egg here. It's really looked down on in rivers like this. They'll eat an egg in July.
Yeah.
It's just an orb.
They're inquisitive creatures.
They're going to eat it. And it's just, but I don't know that whole. That's sucking you down the rat hole trying to get somebody to say, well, that one's trash, this one's not. I always make fun of Perdigons. It's arguably the best fly I'd ever lived.
It's but inherently, like, it is subjective, and it's virtue signaling. And, like, I do it. I'm a huge offender of this.
Yeah.
I don't really nymph much, but it's not. And I like to talk shit about it. But, like, it's fun. I did it the other day. It's fun. I like it. I just don't do it that much. There's other ways I prefer to fish.
That's the whole point.
Yes.
It's like, I talk trash about your, I fish those things all the time.
All the time.
I mean, Kelly
fishes these things all
the time. I Euroed before Euro was Euroed. Yeah. And I mean, we always did. If you grew up tight lining, I don't care what you want to call it. I don't care. It's how you like to fish. Mm-hmm. And we took shit about it then. Joe Humphreys damn near got thrown out of the industry if he wasn't such a badass, he probably would have. But I mean, he was up on the Rockwell. He did a shot an ESPN show up there, and he was tight lining amnesia.
What year roughly?
70-something.
Yeah.
You know, and it was like, oh, my God, you're not fly fishing. Oh, God, give it up. Just, this goes back to the whole reading the comments on these things when people want to go batshit crazy about anything. We said this at lunch today. I was listening to Adele. I love that woman's voice. And she's drunk on stage, and she's just,
smoking a cigarette, right?
I don't know if she was smoking in that, but she's drinking and she's going off about all her haters. And I was just like, holy shit, Adele's got a hater? How can you hate? Your life's pretty fucking pathetic. If you got to write to Adele to tell her what a piece of shit she is because you don't like her song, God, your life must suck. I can't imagine what your life's like.
I
get when they don't like me,
yeah.
But I get that. But I mean, it gave me a breath of fresh air in a way that, shit, if Adele's got haters, I'm digging it. I mean, if you don't like, if your time is so invaluable that you could write to someone that you've never met, I mean, how hard is it? In the old days, you'd turn the TV off.
Right.
And now, just shut up and,
what's
you know,
this? It's this.
Yeah, just exactly.
Just
shut it
disconnect.
Off. Who cares? But yeah. The whole thing about trash flies, back to, because you hear it constantly. In a fly shop, that's all you hear. I remember, I mean, my first trash fly was an egg that I remember people just talking shit about because it was steelhead. And then the next one was the worm.
Mm-hmm.
And then it was the mop. And there's probably one I'm missing in here. But then it was the soulless Perdigons.
Yeah.
Well, I got to tell you. In their realm, they're the best of the best.
so,
I mean, and now you come down to what we talked about last week with Bucky and John and Rowan. They're so good that they don't need to comment on this. They don't need to talk their opinion. I would be surprised to see one of them. Huh?
Somebody said you missed Gary LaFontaine, too. In that discussion.
Well, Gary LaFontaine's not from there.
Well, I don't know why they said that.
But, no, we were talking about West Yellowstone.
Yeah, West Yellowstone.
And Nick Nicholas, too. I mean, he passed. But, I mean, there's tons. I mean, my God, it was the epicenter.
Yeah.
I mean, Gary LaFontaine, if you want to say I missed him, you're correct. He is one of my all-time heroes.
Yeah.
And I spent enough, not a lot of time at Gary, but enough to know he... For those of you who don't know, I'm going to just quickly address this. I don't want to talk about that. I want to talk about trash flies. But Gary, when I started diving, watching smallmouth in Lake Michigan, and then I'd look for trout. And actually, they planted it a lot, and I would chase them around too, trying to figure them out. But my real diving was nothing to do with trout or with streamer fishing. When I first started diving, I thought Gary LaFontaine was full of shit. I read his book, and I'm thinking, this guy is goofy. There's no way. And then I'm out trying to find, because I'd never seen a caddis do. It wasn't the fishing part. It was what the bugs were doing.
The entomology.
Yeah, and I was like, oh, shit. He's about 10, 20 years ahead of us. And then I realized as my arrogance shrunk because I'm seeing that he's right, now he's probably 30 years ahead of us. And he was... as living, well, not at that point, living legends go, Gary LaFontaine was my, I mean, yeah. You look at what he did. He was so far ahead of his time, never would say a word. I mean, he's the most humble guy I ever met. But so back, I'm sorry if it sounded like I left Gary out. I would never leave Gary out of any conversation in fishing in the world. But I was speaking about West Yellowstone anglers.
Right.
But I did, you're right, because I was talking about people who moved the scale forward, and I was talking about so many of the, I just was referencing that zone, people who did the fly tying. And by the way, Gary LaFontaine's flies, most people think look like shit. They've never fished them.
Right.
Gary LaFontaine's flies are based in observation. You know who fished the hell out of those things?
Who's that?
Andy Sabota.
Ah.
The guy I like to pick on constantly. He was fishing that, coloring his lead. He also was one of the, probably the first guy to color his leader, was Gary. Just a million things ahead of him. But you're right, I didn't bring him up. But there's a lot of anglers I didn't bring up. But,
yeah.
But back to that trash fly thing. That one is just something to drag you down a rat hole.
Yep.
That is...
something to make you feel bad.
In the steelhead world, as the younger anglers came along in the steelhead swing world, and they started, oh, my, intruder? Intruders were like, oh, my God.
Sacrilegious.
Yeah, I mean, are you shitting me? That's not. And I was coming off, Mel and I went bird hunting 2 days ago, coming off the mountain. God, I never missed so many birds in my life. It was awful. I kept falling down the, I had my bifocals on, and I'm on the side of the mountain, and grouse would get, they're always below me, right? And I'd lean forward, I'd shoulder my gun, lean into my gun, I'd run like 5 feet down the, and I'm like, holy shit. And I'm like, oh, there goes one, and I'd fall down. It was like crazy
that's
shit.
Great.
But we came down, and there's two guys packing out, elk guys, archers. And we just got talking, and it didn't take long before, the guy's name was Wade or Wayne, really fun guys, about, it didn't take 2 minutes to get on to, you know, he owned an archery shop, but couldn't stand crossbows, but he has to sell them, right?
Perfect.
He hates them, yeah. You know, and I get it. That's just, and that's what trash flies are. That's this whole thing. As much as I pick on Euro, I think it's been one of the greatest things for our sport in history. Mm-hmm. And so trash flies, who fishes trash more than anybody? Chris, who fishes mops, and he loves them, right? So what's the difference? Who cares? Is it, because it's the same, if you're not old enough, you won't understand it, but it's the same thing with the hare's ear, same thing with the pheasant tail, those things, you know, that's not fly fishing, they sink, blah, blah, blah.
There's one of my favorite sayings ever, and I can't remember for the life of me where I heard it, is everybody fucks weird to someone.
Well, that's kind of X-rated for this show, dude.
I'll bleep it out. But it's essentially...
You know what Mel says?
What's that?
You never bleep it out.
No,
I might bleep that
one out. We'll see. But it's essentially to each their own, right? Like, part I want to address here specifically is he says, you know, he's talking about the streamers and the dry flies, and he says, but isn't the whole point to catch fish? For some people it is. Not for
it
everyone.
It is for everyone when they start.
When they start, yeah. Yes. When you start, it is about catching fish.
So why rain on their parade?
Yeah.
I mean, what is the time frame? Now, you've been fishing 2.6 years. You got to stop that. Well, I still dig watching the bobber go down.
It's still fun. Yeah. It's an incredibly subjective thing. And
just to be clear, when we started streamer fishing, we were the turd in the punch bowl.
Absolutely.
And we were ruining the world.
Yep.
And when Euro did, they were ruining the world. Everybody did something. If you go back in time, unless you're still throwing dry only, you ruined something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, your tastes may change. Be open to that. But
yeah,
I love to virtue signal people. It makes me feel big.
I'm proud of you.
I'm the worst person.
I'm proud of you.
But I always do it in a joking tone, right? Like, I understand why people nymph. I get to fish enough, or I have the luxury of fishing enough where I don't really care about catching fish anymore. I go out with a tiny puck of flies. If they don't eat them, that's okay. for me, I enjoy fishing. And for a lot of people, they don't get to fish that much, and catching fish is...
Well, here's another way to look at it. If everybody did just what you did and didn't do the other shit, you wouldn't catch shit. If everybody went out and swung every day and every run,
yep.
and everybody quit, or if everybody just did dry flies, well, that would be more pressure on you. So
it wouldn't change my catch rate. I never catch shit anyways.
Yeah, but the average person who catches fish, it would. Right. And so be glad they're doing it. Everybody's worried that the nymph guys are going to catch all the fish. Nobody catches all the fish. Besides, they'll start eating again in 20 minutes. Anyway.
Howard catches all the fish.
Yes.
Howard might actually catch every fish.
But they'll start eating again.
Yeah.
They will eat again.
Oh, yeah. There's plenty of data of fish.
I'll give you the data is that I caught that same fish in 3 minutes, three times.
Yeah.
And the same exact fish on the exact same fly.
Yeah.
Right? They never stopped feeding. The only reason I lost him the first time is because he had another bug in his mouth. And I was trying to get it out, and I dropped him, and it broke my other fly with it. And then about three casts later, he eats again. And he comes in, and he had one in his dorsal fin I was trying to get out. And by the way, they were all the same fly.
That feels like a fish whose genetics probably shouldn't be passed down.
It's hungry. You know, you're wrecking his afternoon. He's hungry. And so...
That is one of my favorite lines of yours is when you say you never caught a fish that's up eating dry flies on a streamer.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like I'm really just fucking up his day.
Pretty much.
Don't even throw at him anymore. Just let him keep grubbing.
Let him go.
Come back with a dry fly.
He's probably not big enough to deal with anyway.
All right, you got something behind the desk you want to show off?
Yes. No, I don't. It's under the desk. This person...
Oh, this is nuts.
Alex, where's your thing, Alex? Pause 1 minute because I have to look it up on my phone.
Okay.
I don't want to sit here, so pause. Ready?
All right, pause.
Go. Because I got to look up everything about it. Okay, from behind the desk, but this is also what's pissing me off.
Oh.
Okay?
All right,
we're covering
two
birds with one stone. So, first and foremost, what's pissing me off is this guy makes me feel like less of a person, like a really shitty person, because he says, he sends...
Alex, right?
Alex.
Alex.
Alex, what's his last name? Alex, I'll find it in a second.
It's on this thing, isn't it?
Cutlet.
That side.
So anyway, it says, Mr. Gallup, I might have struck gold and took the risk of purchasing a Patagonia vest. You mentioned you would love to have another one as far... Yours is far gone and discontinued. This happened to me many times in my life. I find something, I love it, fish the hell out of it, unusable, and can't find a replacement. So anyway, I was searching old Metalist reels, and I only use Metalist reels. I like to buy extra reels for a lifetime of parts, and decided to do a quick search after hearing your podcast episode where you mentioned the vest. It's the Patagonia vest that I wear currently. Wouldn't you know, per our discussion, I think may have found it. I've attached pictures so you can verify its size, large, and looks like it hasn't been worn. Either way, it's on the way to slide in with your name on it. If it doesn't fit, feel free to give it to someone. And then he's got a question. But first, who does that?
What did we say about this guy when you're done? I said this guy puts his cart back.
Yeah, and this guy is not a hover shitter, and he puts his cart back and yours. And he sends me this vest, which is exactly the vest I've got a picture of this vest, I think 30 years ago. So here, it's exactly because it's fit like a vest should, because it's got a tippet pocket. It's got everything's laid out where it belongs, right? It's even got this fleece patch on it, which I can't believe it's... And he says, I don't think it's ever been worn. One indicator of that is that Velcro actually works. When I bend over, all the shit in my pockets fall out because the Velcro has not worked in, I don't know how many... This is like really weird to listen to. It's like mine hasn't done that in 10 years. It pisses me off that it makes me feel like a really shitty person.
This person's a very good gift giver, a very caring individual, and above and beyond. I mean, that's just cool.
Yeah, well, just in your defense, you did find one too, and I didn't buy it.
Me? No.
Yes.
Somebody sent that to me. I didn't find that. I'd never do that.
Yes, and so I don't want to do his question right now, but I'm going to next time.
Okay.
So don't let me forget that we're going to do this question. If we do, then I'm even a worse person. So that's what I'm... It wasn't behind the desk. It was a gift. It's like absolute cherry. I mean, I don't know if mine ever looked this good, but it is the right size, Alex. Thank you very much. And I'll answer your question next time because I should have done it in the beginning, but then I couldn't have shown what's behind the desk and what I'm pissed off about, that I'm a terrible person. And it's like, damn, now I got to go do something nice for somebody, not you.
Nobody ever does anything nice for me.
Oh, wow.
Wow, wow, wow. All right, you got banned.
How about the other thing I'm happy about? What's that? Your girlfriend told you that she aligns politically more with me than you. I think that's hilarious. What's your name? Don't want to say?
We're not talking about this. These are private matters, Kelly.
Yes. Yeah, well.
But yeah.
Or your dating girl or whatever. Y'all don't call them girlfriends anymore. Y'all have all these.
Girlfriend's a serious term.
Oh, yeah. She's seriously smart, so she's out.
She likes you, which is scary for me.
So what else?
That's it. Let's do band of the week. Get the hell out of here.
Oh, I wrote this down.
I got to go fishing with that Kyler kid.
That Kyler kid? He's way better than you. What did I... I take a picture of him. Oh, there's a message from Mel. Hello, babe.
Hello,
baby. Hello, baby.
Baby, no.
Baby. What did I do? Oh, yeah. It was the Red Stray Clays or something like that. These guys...
Yeah, Red Clay Strays.
Red Clay Strays.
Yeah.
Those guys are great.
Yeah, they're good. I'm going to butcher. I've never known how to say his name. Jim Croce?
Croce?
Croce.
Yeah, yeah.
All right, I got it right. Great. Cool. I love Jim Croce. Yeah.
How to say his name.
What's that?
How come you don't know how to say his name?
Never said it out loud before. Oh. I always read it, listened to a bunch of his music. The first song I heard of his was I've Got a Name in the soundtrack to Django, which is one of the greatest movies that there's ever been.
Couldn't tell you.
Christoph Waltz is so good. But the soundtrack's great, and yeah, I've Got a Name. Great tune.
Perfect.
Jim Croce.
We got chicken.
Give him a listen, and I think that's all we got.
Appreciate it. Hope you liked it. Hope it helps you out.